and welcome to Backchat from the Bristol Radio Co-op. Hello to everyone in Bristol and listeners on Preston FM. That's 103.2 FM up there in Preston. And Nikki Radio in Hertfordshire. And to our listeners in Swindon. Hello, Swindon FM. This week is the first of our two Christmas specials. Christmas is a time for festive rejoicing and a time for families and children. But what about the 200 or so Palestinian children held in prison without charge in Israel? Some of them beaten, tortured, or even raped. Yes, young girls are arrested too and held in prison, with their families often not knowing what has happened to them. So our show this week is about oppression and religious differences that are happening right now where the Christmas story began. A story too of a country that was bullied and mistreated by the mighty Roman Empire. You could say today that Israel has the backing of the mightiest nation on earth, the USA, which was responsible for 49 wars in the last century. The programme ends with a visit to Belfast, the scene of many conflicts where people from both sides have worked hard to end their disagreements. But first, John Lennon. I'm going to play it as a reminder that John Lennon was a fierce critic of war, especially the Vietnam War, a war fought on ideology that was bound to fail in the end after a heavy loss of life. So let's hear Imagine by John Lennon, followed by an Israeli's point of view of the situation in the Middle East.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people cheering for today. And I imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion to. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you join us. Imagine no possessions. Wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the wealth. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us.
Thank you. David.
Can you tell us about Israel?
About Israel? What exactly do you want to know? Israel contains so much madness.
In what way?
If you go back to the roots of Israel, I think it starts with madness. It starts with irrational behavior of people.
Is this the British you're talking about dividing?
Well, of course the British were there, and then you get a crazy situation in Israel which is very blurry, and some of it relies on religions, which is funny, because in Israel, non-religious people, when you speak about the situation with the Arab people, they go to the religion, but they are not religious at all. So we have no resources to decide who owns the land, or who owned the land, or took over the land, and who forced himself. But eventually what we know happened, clearly, that the British were there. And then what we get? We get Arab people with donkeys sitting on the beach, living their life modestly, with the land, respectable, in a very traditional way. And we have Israeli people who wanted to build Israel and who were traumatized at the same time by the Holocaust. And then you get Hebrew people, Israeli people, who were very intelligent at the moment and who could apply to the British consul, to the British authorities, in order to get the land. But does it make any sense? You know, does it make any sense? Arab people who deal with donkeys and building tents and living with a very basic kind of life, and you get Israeli people who came from Europe and who were used to different standards and who eventually discussed with the British people over the land, ignoring the fact that Arab people were there. But then again, who knows? You know, Israeli people were there and Arab people were there, and it's just messy. I can't explain it, and I think whoever think he can explain it is ignoring some of the facts for sure.
So were you born in Israel?
Oh yeah.
And where did your parents come from?
Well, there you get a nice blend. My father is half Romanian and half Polish. And most of my family on this side was killed in the Holocaust. And then you get the other side of the family. My mother was born in Morocco. And so I'm a mixture of such different cultures.
So you're a mixture of Arab and Israeli.
Oh, there you go. You get into a nice point. Because, you know, Israeli people, we have a lot of Moroccan people. And Moroccan people came to Israel. And we live as if Moroccan people are not Arab people, which is ridiculous. I'm talking about Moroccan Jewish people. But even though they're Moroccan Jewish people, Moroccan language is pretty similar to Arabic. But people, again, choose to ignore stuff in order to divide the society. No, no, no. We have Jewish people, we have Christian people, we have Muslim people, we have Israeli, we have Arab, we have this, we have that. All in order to create a separation and to be governed.
Does it work?
How many lives have been taken already? The soil in Israel is saturated with blood that it's unbelievable, and we keep doing stuff which are not rational. And who can explain this situation, this crazy situation that a mother is happy to give her son to the army, to the military, and she knows and she prepares herself in some kind of way that he might die there. And this preparation for his death is pure craziness. And on the other side, you have Arab people, which basically do the same. The family encouraged the Arab guy to be a shaheed, to commit suicide in order to kill a lot of people. But we refer to it as craziness. But why is it crazy? It's the same. We send our sons to the war to die, and we keep on being proud of it. What is it to be proud of? Doesn't it make sense to live, to want people to live? And does it make any sense to illude yourself to think that you can solve a situation of hate with another hate.
What do you think about the wall? Gaza and the wall.
The wall. Funny, because when I was a young boy, my parents read to me, it's just a children's story. Reminds me of it every time, because what is it? What's going on in the world? Why do people build a wall?
To keep people in or to keep people out?
Exactly. But if I want to live my life, yes, and I want people to be out of my life, that means that I want to keep myself in a bubble. Do I want to... Who is benefiting here? I live in a bubble, which makes no sense. And I keep people out of the bubble. If I don't care about them, in some way I don't care about myself as well. Why? Because if they will be frustrated and they want to come in, it's a 1 meter high. And tomorrow they will bring a letter, it's 2 meters high. And tomorrow they will fly with balloons to the sky, and it's 5 meters high. Eventually I will reach the moon. But still the problem is not solved. Because I have fear in my heart, and I have no compassion, and the other side is suffering, or not suffering, but there is no communication. It's ridiculous.
Have you ever been to Gaza?
Never, unfortunately. Never. It's because I think that if I go there, I cannot face the situation, because it will force me to take a side. And I don't have a side. I don't want to tell them how I think that Israeli people are stupid. And I don't want to shout in their face that I think the Arabic people are stupid. I think we all are stupid. And if one person cannot face his stupidity, then he shouldn't speak about other people's stupidity. And if I'm not ashamed of the fact that I've never been in Gaza, never brought peace between me and people in Gaza, if I had no shame about it, I would never speak about other people. And so, it's not a problem, it's not enough to be ashamed of those things. But I think we should take an action, and it's not smart to do something, and this is what happened, unfortunately, in the world, that people go ahead of their time, and they try to reach a certain point without appropriate preparation.
Martin Luther King spoke out for all oppressed peoples of the world. As we celebrate another Christmas, further deterioration in the plight of the Palestinians goes unhindered in the West, and Israel continues to break international laws on human rights. The Palestinians continue to make, as did Dr. Martin Luther King, a non-violent protest for which they are constantly punished by Israel.
We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory is won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory is won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory is won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators. But we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great cap meeting in the corner.
I'd like to ask you to sing this last song with me, which is a very strange thing to do because it's an old song and it's a trite song, but in a new context, it's still a beautiful song. When I sing this thing, I remember seeing David for the last time as he rode away with the feds with his hands cuffed and the big Glowicki resist the draft sticker on the bumper, which the resistance had put on while they were arresting him. So. We shall
oh!
feature now from both Britons and a Palestinian about the ongoing situation in Gaza and the West Bank.
Involved in an internet forum, and we were discussing amongst ourselves a meeting being held in the House of Parliament that's meant to represent the life of Palestinians on the West Bank. However, I subsequently discovered that this was run by a society called the Henry Jackson Society. Deputy chair of that group is someone called Douglas Murray, who's an extreme neocon. I recently googled Henry Jackson and found out that the group of individuals involved want to undertake action like stopping Muslims immigrating to Britain, and also have views on Britain's being involved in a global expansion to neocon ambitions, including using force against people. I imagine that the society is involved in propaganda and propaganda actions, feeding, of course, into our parliament through the MPs, and also, I think, have direct lines to newspaper and the media, including the BBC and all the mainstream media. They're extremely wealthy and well-organized group. And when one hears about them, one realizes that not only is this an issue to do with the Middle East, but it's to do with a class issue and the division between rich and poor, those who have power and those who don't in Britain. I've recently, in a forum, have tried to confront, this is for therapists, have tried to discuss the question of Palestine and the fact of the Israeli occupation there. Reactions to this were mixed. Some people understood very clearly, others didn't. In my researches in relation to this, I discovered that Israel had used the illegal weapon white phosphorus, I believe in 2006 and 2009. White phosphorus is a terrible weapon. When the bomb of phosphorus land, it explodes into hundreds of fragments. And when they land on the skin, they're like burning masses that burrow into the body and enter the victim's body and continue burning inside the victim's body. And there's nothing on earth that can put them out. Even when victims have been brought into hospital, the doctors there are completely helpless to do anything about this. This weapon is illegal, and its horror really can't be described. If you remember the well-known picture in relation to the Vietnam War of the naked girl running, burning with napalm, white phosphorus is 100 times worse than napalm, which is why it's illegal. But even though Israel has used this weapon, it's never been made known really in the British media, and there's never been any action against them. It's completely a war crime.
It was terrible, and it was so difficult to get through to these people, to see that you see these children have been massacred, they have been burnt. What phosphorus has been used on their bodies? Old people, the houses have been brought down on their heads. Can't you show some remorse? Can't you show some sympathy? And unfortunately, it was not forthcoming.
Some people said, Ray, we agree with you completely and support you completely. What was very nice was there was a reply from an Israeli psychologist living in Israel who said that she completely understood the situation, and there were groups within Israel trying to mobilize, and she provided a link to an Israeli group called The Other Voice, which is a website for Israeli activists. But I was horrified by the fact that the professional people on this forum, apart from four or five that I mentioned that offered support, didn't react at all to that. They didn't express any concern about white phosphorus, nor have they expressed any sympathy about the 165 Palestinians killed by Israeli jets and by drones, and seemed quite unmoved. This sort of lack of responsiveness in people, I think, really reflects the way people have been not informed by the media or indoctrinated.
prisoners widely. I've heard about the number of prisoners that are in prison over there. There are thousands of Palestinian prisoners. Quite recently, some of them went on hunger strike because of the fact that they are kept in prison without a trial or being charged with anything. A lot of them are children and a lot of them are women.
Why did the Israelis arrest children? Isn't it against international law?
It is against international law, but then again, a lot of things that Israelis do are against international law, including building settlements in the West Bank and tearing down villages. In addition to arresting children, children have also been badly beaten by the Israelis and prisoners have been tortured. People have died in Israeli prisons. And at the moment, there's an actual Facebook campaign where people are asked to take a photograph of themselves and send it into Facebook group. And there are thousands of people throughout the world who are responding to it.
What age are the children that they're arresting and incarcerating?
Well, only yesterday I heard about an 11-year-old boy who was accused of throwing stones. He was taken into interrogation by the Israelis, who apparently blew smoke in his face and popped a gun, and it kept him in quite severe for about 5 hours. And then they shared a photograph of his father standing outside. He wasn't actually put in prison. There's a lot of children who are under 16 years old of age who are in Israeli prisons.
Are they treated well?
No, they're not treated well at all. As I said, some of them are severely beaten. There's been accusations of actual torture against children. A really, really grim situation.
Is Amnesty helping in the imprisonment of children?
Amnesty has a campaign about the imprisonment of children. If you look on Amnesty, you'll be able to find out that Amnesty frequently mentions the conditions in Palestinian prisons. So, yes, they do.
So have you any idea of the numbers of children in prison over there?
It certainly runs in several hundred. I can't give you an exact figure offhand, but several hundred.
How are the children arrested?
Well, you heard about the tonight of just one village of 200 children in prison. Well, very often people come in the middle of the night and just bang on the door and insist, and that it can be quite a ferocious, almost an attack on the house, and to drag the children out. People only have to look on Facebook and see pictures of soldiers pointing their guns at very, very small children and holding them in really vicious positions and sometimes standing on the children. It's really unpleasant.
My name is Moussa Boumeria. I'm from Beit Umar, part of West Bank, Palestine.
Can you tell us about your village and how it's been affected by Israeli settlements?
My village, it was surrounded by 6 settlements from the north and the south, and from the entrance is controlled from the Israeli soldiers. So the big problem we have when the settlers, they were attack our farmers in the harvest time by throw the sewage water and they damage our fruit or they cut our olive trees. And this is the way how the Israeli settler, they kick the Palestinian farmers from them land. And for what we are doing is like to save our land by grow the trees again and to do any kind of help of our farmers.
Why are the Israelis so spiteful and so horrible to your people?
We are talking about religious settlers. They're believing the God they promised them for Palestinian land, and the Palestinians, they should live from that land. And the way why they attack the Palestinians, because they believe the Palestinians, they are not the owner of the land, and the Jewish, they are the owner of the land. But when we talk about Palestinian side, we have all the documents since more than 200 years, and when we are talking about like the Israeli occupation, we are talking the Israeli occupation, they are in Palestine since 65 years. So when the radical settlers, they attacking farmers in hard way, is just because like to make Palestinians farmers, they have hard life and to live from them land.
You've actually been imprisoned twice by the Israelis. Why?
Actually, I was in Israeli prison like twice without any charge, and they put me under the Ministry of Detention without any charge, just because that's the way how they hurt me and they treat me. This is not just only me. There's many prisoners. They were in the prison without any charge for long times. And that law, the Israelian, they use it is just because they want to put the Palestinian activists in the prison because they don't want them like to resist in a nonviolent way or like to tell more people about what happened in Palestine.
So do you have any form of trial?
No. I don't.
They just arrest you and put you straight in prison?
Yes, just they came to my home and they told me we want to talk to you 1 hour or 2 hours. And then they put me in prison for long times and without any charge. I went to the court many times, nothing in you. Always they told me that's security and I don't know the way and which law I can use like to release myself. But actually when we talk about Israeli occupations, they are not respecting the law. They are not human. Just that's the way how they keep the Palestinians in bad conditions and they make them more suffering in Palestine.
What's it like in Israeli prison?
I was in three prisons, big prisons, like Ascalon and Be'er Sheva and the Negev. Those prisons, like the life, it was very hard to stay in that prison. And that's the big prison inside Israel. So when there's people, they put him there for a long time.
Can you describe what happened every day in the prison? Were you in a single cell or with many people?
Actually, always I am with other political prisoners. Sometimes with 10 people, sometimes with 6 people. But when we talk about the life in the prison, of course, it's hard because the food is bad. The doctors, there's no doctors. The medicine is really bad. And when someone, he becomes sick, we don't have a doctors. Always also the soldier, they attack the prisoners. They separate them from each other. We have really bad condition in prison. And the way why we make hunger strike is like to ask for sometimes a good service, for a good food, for a good medicine. And sometimes when we make hunger strike also because we are in the prison without any charge. And the way to release is to make hunger strike. And that's how we struggle from prison.
Did they execute any people while you were in prison?
Yes. I remember many times the police, they were like hate people in violent way and some of them, they were die. Not a human way when they attack like people in prison. People, they have nothing like to do. Just they are in prison.
Did you see any children in prison?
Yeah, of course, I saw many children in prison. The children, they were afraid. They have problems. They told me about how the soldiers are violent, how they treat them, how they beat them. So the life, it was very hard for them also.
Did they imprison any girls or any male?
No, of course, they also arrested the girls and they put them in a prison. And many of girls, they were pregnant inside the prison.
Were they raped?
Yeah. They have baby inside the prison. So, and that's very hard when we talk about the baby, how they grow also in a prison in bad way. They stay far from his father. You know, and that's really very bad way. That's not a human way. When women, they can be in prison without any charge and they can, like, pregnant in prison. They can have the baby from prison.
Going back to your village, how do the Israelis control it? Is it by barriers? Is it by watchtowers?
The Israeli soldier, they control my village by watchtowers and gates from the entrance. And that's the way how they control all people from my village. And when the soldier, they close the gate from the entrance of my town, no one he allowed to go outside or inside. And if anyone he try to open the gate, the soldier, they will shoot him by rubber bullet or life ammunition or any kind of weapon. Just this is the way how they make the Palestinian in my town more suffering. Just they can close like the gate and they can make Bitumar as a prison.
You're here in Britain to do it all, to promote passive resistance, like Gandhi and Martin Luther King. What's your message to people while you're over here? How can they support your cause and also get the media interested? Because the media are not covering this or not doing anything.
Actually, my message to the British peoples and government is to make real action for Palestinian side, because the way how the people here, they can support Palestine. It's only they can go to Palestine and they can see how the life is hard for people under the occupations. The other message for the government here is not to support the occupation in Palestine. Because when they support the occupation in Palestine, that means they support to kill more people in Palestine. And really, we have hope from people here in the British, they can do something more actions and real action for Palestinian side. And I invite them always, they can go to Palestine.
Do you think if the papers and the television condemned the Israeli action more, that something would actually start happening? It's because of the media not covering your situation.
Also, we are upset about the British media here because they don't record like our life. They don't explain to the people here about how the life hard in Palestine. And they don't know why they keep that under the ground. They don't show the people about the reality about Palestine. And we feel upset about the media here. And our hope, if they can change that for a good thing for the future, they can talk about the truth. And the truth, if they can go to Palestine and they can record or interview the peoples, the farmers, the children, and then they can back with a good message, and they can show people from the TV or from the newspaper about the real life in Palestine. So we need the media. They can change and they can work in human side.
Joan Baez sings All My Trials.
Hush, little baby, don't you cry. You know your mama was born to die. Trials, Lord, soon be over. The river of Jordan is muddy and cold. Well, it chills the body, but not the soul. My trials, Lord, soon be over. I've got a little book with pages three, and every page spells liberty.
We leave the Middle East and go over to Belfast, scene of Northern Ireland's most violent clashes.
Belfast was a village. It was an area north of Belfast called the Shank Hill, and therefore the Shank Hill Road developed.
What year did the British Army arrive here?
69, in support of civil powers, support the police, who were 3,000 policemen who effectively couldn't cope with the civil unrest.
People glad to see the army arrive or not?
Yes, everybody was at the time, yes.
The army behave themselves when they were here?
Well, at the beginning, yes, but then there were incidents, of course, because you're dealing with human nature, and there's always that kind of problem, isn't there, when you're dealing with human nature. The Scottish soldiers were murdered just up the hill. They were off duty. They were in the city centre of Belfast. They were lured away by three girls. They were lured away, and then they were taken away and murdered by the IRA. And that kind of stopped. The army then became into that kind of situation where they couldn't really mix with the local people. They became very much onto themselves. But it wasn't safe to mix with local people. You didn't know who was going to be a kind of a fifth columnist and drag you away and have you shot.
When was the last troops on the streets of Belfast?
After the Belfast Agreement sometime, I can't remember dates. But troops are still stationed here, of course, because we're part of the United Kingdom. And there are still military barracks here, as there are in Wales and Scotland and England. This is the Glen Cairn estate here, a big estate that was built as part of the redevelopment of Belfast. And therefore, a lot of folks from the Shankill were moved up into this Glen Cairn area. And that was before the Troubles.
Tell me about the Shankill Road pronunciation.
Well, the general English pronunciation of that alphabet is A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K. The kind of Celtic, Catholic pronunciation is A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M. And therefore, people often at nights would be stopped by various paramilitary groups and asked to recite the alphabet, so that they could identify which community they came from. And if they came the wrong one, they'd get a bit of lead in their head. This is an orange hall here called the White Rock Orange Hall. There's a parade up to here the last Saturday in June every year. It has, for some years, down the lower part of the Springfield Road, which we didn't drive up, has caused some conflict.
What's this say? Bring Hill Westport Massacre. This is 1972,
yes.
Belfast Bloody Sunday. It says the British Army murdered 5 Irish citizens.
Well, yes, well, the Paras were in here. They came under fire. They returned fire, and obviously all the people who they thought were carrying arms or whatever. And when bullets are flying, it's, you know, it's very difficult. This would be a Catholic area now we're in. Catholic stroke nationalist stroke Republican, whatever kind of designation you want to put on it.
Is it all Catholics, or do people live side by side now?
Not so much in Belfast. Very little of that in Belfast. Some areas, yes. Some of the more middle-class areas. There would be mixed housing, but most social housing would be single-identity social housing. It would be identified with one community or another.
So where does this actually stop, then? Where do we stop being Catholic and go into Protestant?
Well, we've just come out of Protestant into Catholic, and we're going to try and go down the, what's called the White Rock Road, down to drive down the falls, and then head on up to Stormont.
So, is there any demarcation?
Well, the demarcation was further back there at the top of the Springfield Road, where the Springfield Road met the West Circular Road, the roundabout we came around. That's a kind of a demarcation line there. So we're hitting a lot of school traffic now that slows us down. Again, you see a lot of murals have appeared also on walls around here, highlighting various parts of...
It's amazing, isn't it? It's a council house with the whole of the end wall,
yes, you find
painted
that
in a big mural, political mural.
Yes.
Oh, here we are, look. On the right as we go up, it's got collusion, state murder, the usual suspects. And it's got a row of men with their backs turned with labels on. Murder, 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 it
says. Well, people who were commonly called, as we said before, the Supergrass Trials. People like Brian Nelson, you see, was one involved in what was called the Supergrass Trials.
We've got one label there, media coverage, British surveillance.
Blame
intelligence.
Blame everybody. Everybody's to blame.
There's another one there, Bally Murphy Massacre. It's terrible. It's everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah. This was all, I remember all this being green fields when I was a child. We used to walk up here.
There's like individual plaques with words on. That's quite powerful. No more pain. Dreadful. It's like war in the suburbs. There's another mural coming out on the side of this council house. And that shows soldiers with guns, IRA men with guns.
This is the city cemetery, the big, the largest cemetery.
More murals here, aren't there? What are these two?
Somebody who was shot. Kevin Lynch was shot.
So we're going down the hill now to the Falls Road, and we can see Belfast stretched out in the distance. Oh, there's a mural here. What's this about? This is more sports.
It's a boxer, yeah.
There's horse racing, boxing. So that's a non-war mural. Big mural on the wall here. It's a Sinn Féin trade union movement. Absolutely incredible how history is here on the walls. What's that?
Hunger strikers there, Nugent.
Large scale murals of history painted everywhere.
Over there, called Broadway Church. Orangemen used to parade there, have an annual service. Haven't done that for many a year. It's now a culture, an Irish language cultural centre. It's called Culturalan.
Just in the mural, it says 17 people killed, including women and children. Conflict Resolution Services, Ireland. Oh, we're in the Falls, part of the Falls.
To my left is St Mary's University College and the famous Royal Victoria Hospital. First of all, the Royal Victoria Children's Hospital, and now the major Royal Victoria Hospital, where there's considerable rebuilding going on.
Conflict happened here in the Falls Road.
There's little things like murders, you know, people dying and all, you know. When I'm coming down to one of the major thoroughfares between the Protestant Shankill and the Catholic Falls, it's called Northumberland Street. We've already referred to that on the way up the Shankill. We're now referring to it on the way down the Falls. at this road junction. There's been a fair bit of conflict at the very beginning, and barriers, of course, were put up to separate the communities. This side to my left, there was a large mill called the New Northern Mill, but now, of course, milling and that kind of industry is gone, so it's now redeveloped. There's also, before that, the Conway Mill. These were all big mills in the days of industry in Belfast.
There's a whole wall here of murals, political murals.
Here's Percy Street, which goes up onto the Shankill Road again on my left. This is barricaded off because this too was a point of conflict in the earlier days of the Troubles, when a lot of the conflict was hand-to-hand fighting on the ground. It wasn't the same as it became with bombs when the country became more developed.
If the British Army hadn't arrived, would you have had a full-scale civil war then?
Well, some people do say that would have been better if it was over and done with a lot quicker and wouldn't have lasted for 40-odd years. When I go on to the what's called the West Link, which takes you onto the motorway, I'm again over to East Belfast and to Stormont.
Orange Men is the Loyal Orange Institution of Ireland, and Orange Men in general originated when Orange Societies were formed in the south of England to welcome William and Mary at the time of what's commonly called the Glorious Revolution. They, of course, existed for a while during William and Mary's joint reign. They disappeared, but after the Battle of the Boyne, Orange Societies were formed, and there are other names for them, like the Loyal Orange William Society or the Enniskillen Society, groups that fraternal groups which met to remember the battles of the Irish campaign.
Why was William of Orange invited to come to Britain in the first place?
Because James II was a bad king. He had converted to Catholicism. He was attempting with Louis, some of the Louis of France, I don't know which one, to impose Catholicism on England. Orange societies were formed to support William and Mary in their reign. After the Battle of the Boyne, other societies were formed in Ireland to remember the events in Ireland. And then in 1795, the Orange Order, or the Orange Society, was formed, which was, in fact, a conglomeration of all the various societies which existed. But it was sparked off because of the pressure on land in County Armagh, and a lot of Catholic folks from other parts of Ireland came into Armagh, taking up land, and Protestants felt as if they were being put out of the county. There was a little battle called the Battle of the Diamond, which was really a bit of a ruckus in which a few people were murdered, shot. But other than that, the Orange Association was formed after that. So the Loyal Orange Institution of Ireland can trace itself back to 1795, but Orangeism in general is much more widespread than the Orange Order.
People in Ireland see this as a predominantly English faction.
No, that aspect of the history has been largely forgotten about.
Why have they tried to ban marches by the Orange Men in the past? Has it caused problems?
Well, the British government banned parading in the past, not marching. I've never seen an Orange march in my life, because I've never seen two Orange Men keep in step. March, I usually think of the military marching, where they do keep in step.
Why do they parade the Orange Men in Ireland?
For various reasons, but chiefly it's to remember the Battle of the Boyne. They do so on the 12th of July every year, providing, of course, the 12th is not on a Sunday, otherwise they parade on a Monday. 12th of July is really the 1st of July, because the calendar changed, as you know, in 1752. The Battle of the Boyne was really on the 1st of July.
Why is the Battle of the Boyne so significant in Ireland?
Well, it was one of the final battles of the European campaign, whereby James II was trying to regain the throne and oust William and Mary. It wasn't the final one. The final one was the Battle of Aughrim a year later. But the Battle of the Boyne was the one that was the decisive one in many ways, because after that, James fled.
Is that really significant for a lot of Irish people then?
It should be significant for all Irish people, north and south, because it was part of the whole development of Western democracy and civil and religious liberty for all.
In what way? Can you explain that?
To live back in the 17th century, you only had a vote if you were a lord or a sir or something. you didn't have any sense of democracy at all. But the whole thing was overthrown by the Glorious Revolution and the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights of William and Mary, which was received by William and Mary, was provided by the Parliament. They received it, accepted it, and promised to rule under the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights meant that the King could not impose taxes, only Parliament could. The King couldn't raise an army, only Parliament could. And that Parliaments had to be called. Now, they had to be called by what was the democracy of the day, which was not, of course, a universal franchise, but that was really the turning point of Western democracy and its whole impact in the British system of democracy.
Was that when the monarch lost all power of absolutism?
That was the beginning of the constitutional monarchy in William and Mary's reign.
Were many people killed in these battles in Ireland, and who fought against who?
William's army was made up of various regiments from Ireland, including the Enniskillens. He also had a Dutch regiment within the Dutch Blues. They were actually a Catholic regiment, although they fought for William. There were some Protestant regiments, of course, also that fought for James. So it's seen rather in simplistic terms by some people as Protestants fighting Catholics, but it wasn't just as simplistic as that.
What was the long-term effects of that battle?
Well, the long-term effects, I suppose, the cynic would say, we see it every year.
What would have been the effect on Ireland had William of Orange lost the battle?
Well, the question is wrong, because not the effect in Ireland. The effect would have been on European democracy and in terms of the British monarchy, not just Ireland. If William had been defeated, you would have been back to an intolerant regime of James II.
That's all from Lab Chat this week. Features were by Anthea Page. Studio engineer was Adrian Petrowski. And the producer was Anthea Page. So it's goodbye from me, Kirsty Paul. Until next week, goodbye. And have a good Christmas.
Backchat aims to be an impartial show. We did invite a member of the Israeli community to come on the show, but they declined our offer.